All right. Are you ready?
I am.
Let's do it. Thank you for joining us on The Change Artist, where we bring our listeners stories and great advice for leading and following through change from business leaders who are making a difference in their organizations. I'm your host, Alyssa Cox. And here on The Change Artist, our motto is, if change is the only constant in life, then let's do it better. And this season, we're focusing specifically on the language of change and how we drive effective communications as we pursue a change journey. So let's jump right in. Jay, when it comes to communicating around change, how do you know if you've been effective?
The straightforward answer is that you get the desired result you want. So I think just to give a short answer, a question to ask yourself is, are you getting what you need along the way? Are you making progress? So do I have commitment or do I have compliance? Compliance is something you do because you have to. Commitment is something you do because you want to. If you are embarking with this word change, and I would hit pause here and invite people to understand how people are interpreting this word in the organization. So, you know, low-hanging fruit, you know, somebody who's experienced change and they had to move to a different city and sell their home might view it differently than someone who's won the lottery and their life changed. And so I think the first opportunity is to look at the words, understand the weight of it. And one, is that the best word to use? So if you're going to modify things, if it's evolving and you can comfortably use those words, I would encourage you to do it. The second thing, if you're going to stick with the word change, is to understand people's thinking and emotions around that word. And I think that will drive what you are trying to measure along the way. Is this commitment or this compliance that will lead to the ultimate performance you need from this quote unquote change?
There is a lot to unpack, which is the whole point of this show. For those of you who don't know him, Jay Williams is an author, speaker, and communication coach focused on helping his clients create alignment among leaders and executives to ensure clarity of values, company culture, strategic priorities, and key business metrics. He's also the author of This Versus That, Better Thinking, Better Choices, Better Leader, and Leave Your Mark, The Thinking Skills and Behaviors of Influencers. Now, Jay, I want to get back into what you said around word choice and do you use the word change? If we're not using the word change, what are some other words that we could be using, or how do we think about identifying the right words to talk about change, but not sort of trigger the emotional freight of the word change?
It's easier said than done, for this simple reason that no two human brains are alike. So what's not a trigger for me could be a trigger for someone else. And so I offer that. I think it's important as you go along is to get this real-time feedback, information, data on how people are perceiving the experience. And I would focus on what the outcome would be from this change. And so if we're going to grow, if we're going to serve our clients better, whatever the outcome is, I would look to use these words in lieu of the change. And so if we're going to evolve to meet more of the needs of our clients, if we are going to modify some of what we're currently doing so that people can collaborate better, so that they can communicate more efficiently, I think that quote unquote why behind that change is the thinking that will resonate with the people. It's the thinking that you need to get them to buy in. Now, if you are going to incorporate, I don't want to avoid the word change, but just amongst us, is to understand, do they see the benefit? And if not, that might be your primary focus, is to shift their thinking so that they can see the benefit of what's going on. Because the reality is, I used it early on, is people don't mind change. They don't. I mean, if I said your life's going to change, you just won the lottery, nobody's pushing back. I think it's when they perceive that change as being something negative or the loss. And the loss is generally of what's familiar. So if I could deviate a little bit, these are triggering thoughts in my head, is I start off with what's not going to change. And I think as a leader in an organization, if you can take inventory of what's not going to change, and you begin the conversations that way, here's what won't change is my commitment to you as a leader. Here's what won't change is that what we value as an organization will still take precedent, priority will be the filters in which we make decisions. What won't change, you'll still be able to work at home. What won't change is your compensation. What won't change are your benefits, your time off. I think for human beings that if they can understand what won't change, that will free up their thinking and their receptivity to what might not look exactly the same.
I think that's really important as well. I mean, I've seen in a number of change scenarios, in a number of projects, a number of initiatives, when teams communicate, they focus so much on the communication of what is changing and fail to talk about what's not changing. And what it does is it creates this sense among your recipients of communication that maybe everything is changing. Maybe everything is up for grabs. And the stress associated with trying to suss out what's up for grabs and what's not, it drives a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, and a lot of negative behavior and resistance to change that isn't even anchored in what's really changing.
I think what you've articulated is that maybe what change once meant doesn't mean the same thing, or it means something. Do we just rebrand? And what you said about our choice of words, it does carry weight. When you look at the used car industry, there was an opportunity to rebrand. And so I don't know what was worse, the used car or the perception of the used car salesperson, because they made movies and jokes about both. They rebranded that because they saw it was a pinch point in their overall strategy. So what do you know a used car as now?
I mean, I hear OEMs talk about used cars as like pre-owned.
Exactly. And just you and I talking about that, we feel completely different. I'll buy a pre-owned car. I don't know if I want to buy a used car. So to their credit, they had to do some rebranding of the verbiage and terminology. And I think more than ever is that it's going to be, you change a little, you change a lot. And we have to really factor in the weight of words and people's connotation and experience with it. And you could be off to a flying stop if you don't. By the way, I have met people who seek constant change because their experience is something good has always come. When they've changed a job, when they've changed where they live, when they've changed their car, when they've changed their style, it's always had a positive outcome. So I wouldn't make an assumption either way.
What I love about the used car example or the pre-owned example is that the other thing the industry did is it called cars certified pre-owned. The industry started to attach certain adjectives to give the pre-owned vehicle an even greater sense of quality, right? And so our language choice here isn't just what you replace the word, the noun, change with. It's also the language that you use for the entire ecosystem in which that change is happening, the qualifiers that you use to talk about benefits to the organization, and the words, the phrase benefit to the organization may also be played out. So I think word choice here, there is a huge ecosystem of language that we use, and it pays us to dig into a number of different trigger points to try to figure out how to use the language that actually communicates what we're trying to say.
I love that you went here because there is a new vocabulary that's evolving for business. I say leader, I know it's somewhat cliche, but if you're influencing anyone as a project manager, as however you are leading an initiative or a project or a product, is that if you're building a culture, you have to be aware of how the culture is responding. I mean, we have all this analytical data now. And there's words that there are being included that people are responding to differently. So if you look at trust, and you look at Stephen Covey's Speed of Trust, he really, I think, introduced that word trust into business. And it's interesting. I was working with a EVP last year, and he said, Jay, can you give me some other words? I use trust in my personal life. I don't use it in my professional life. I feel comfortable with my wife and with my kids. but I wouldn't use it in business, which is another aha, right? Now there's two people who've evolved, one person at work, one person at home, different vocabularies. So there's the introduction of trust, and that's about 14 years or so ago. Then, you know, in the last 6 months, we've heard the number one attribute of a great leader is empathy. We weren't hearing trust and empathy 3 or 4 years ago. And then now you look at Marcus Buckingham's book, Love and Work. So now you've introduced love and trust and empathy. Those are things that we held for people who are near and dear to us. And I think that is the aha, is that that's what people are seeking now, is this connection and this communication and this community. And part of that comes from a language that resonates with us, that we're familiar with and that we like, and a common definition. And so to get back to change, I think there's an evolution of the vocabulary of business and of leaders, and we have to be highly mindful of what word we're choosing and how does that impact the desired outcome.
When we start to see words like love and empathy and partnership in the workplace, are we changing the way we go to work and the language is following? Or is the language changing and it's bringing us along with it? Which of these things comes first?
I believe the human aspect is that what we reserve, this has always been who we are. I mean, you go back to Abraham Maslow, right? Significance, self-worth, and sense of belonging. So this data has been around for years, that this is what we crave as human beings. This is how we succeed. I think we've held it as a criteria for our personal life. I think over the last 3 years, we've felt detachment for a multitude of reasons. Maybe it's via isolation, we're feeling it at work and at home. The human beings at some level, not everyone, is craving this connection, this community, this collaboration. And I think that people are now bringing this to work. I don't want to be two separate people. The way that I feel at home with my significant others, my friends and family, wouldn't that be great if I could feel that way at work as too, just this one life? And so I think with a remote or distributed workforce, that this is going to become the skill of the future, is how do you build this connection? Because I think here's what companies, they have been struggling with for years, and now more than ever, is they have their employees' mental, physical, and financial commitment. They show up, they do their jobs, they get their paychecks. So that's okay. What they want may not be getting is their emotional commitment, because that's the ultimate trigger for discretionary performance, which companies that are thriving, they're getting this discretionary performance from people. And so I think the other thing that happens in order for people to survive is that they disconnect emotionally. And so you have terms like quiet quitters now, I think is a symptom of that, where people quit and stay. Emotionally, they disconnect. They show up, they do their job, get their paycheck, but you're not going to get any more from me.
What's been interesting, I think, with the language recently around the great resignation, quiet quitting, these words, resigning, quitting, these are words that tend to have a really negative connotation. And by using these to talk about what's going on, it's a very employer-centric way of talking about what's going on. And so it's almost like the words that we use place a value judgment on the behavior of the individual. Because what we're not talking about is worker self-actualization. We're not framing it as the great rebalance to emotional health, or the great rebalance to social health, which can be what quiet quitting is, right? It's the decision not to invest your entire self and self-identity into your workplace, to give the workplace what it requires to do the job and have some left in the tank for the rest of your life. How should we be thinking about the language that we choose and the language that we hear and examining that language for some of those biases that we may not have necessarily brought to the conversation before hearing that language?
I think it's quite simple, and I didn't come up with this. It's to ask yourself, am I here to judge or am I here to help? That thinking drives the emotion. And I think there's been a lot of judgment, and understandably so, you know, during this period of time. We've never been more taxed with our identity, our whether we get a shot or not, our political choices. And so I think people are taking things personal. So when they say that you resigned, what they're saying is that you quit me. And I think people feel a betrayal, and that's the thinking. And so the emotion is anger and anxiety, and the behavior is to lash out that way. If you're there to help, I think what happens is that I just want to understand. That's the first thing. I think for people, there's a level of altruism and they want to help, is help me understand. The most effective communicators actually communicate from the other person's perspective. The way that they do that is to make that the priority, to understand it. And so for some of these people that in their mind, they want to create balance, they have a singular definition for it. And it's going to take a skill set that I don't know that everyone has to spend the time and ask the questions to understand their perspective. And when they say they want to separate the two, what would make you not want to separate the two? And I think you're going to find for people, give me flexibility. Don't micromanage me. Give me a task. And if I finish it, what do you care whether I finish it at 3 in the morning or 3 in the afternoon, as long as it gets done. And so I think this is the new skill set, is like, I'm here to help. I want to communicate from your perspective. Let me first understand it. I think the dynamic now is that a lot of people are telling. I hear it over and over. This is what I told them, and this is what I said will happen. And I think when you ask someone a question, genuine, and it's inquisitive, not accusatory, like, well, why won't you come back to work, versus, you know, tell me what would give you a comfort level and how could we bridge that gap? When you ask the question, people believe that you care. And when they believe that you care, they trust you. And I think there's a fundamental lack of trust as far as what companies' intentions are by having people come back to work. There's nothing evil there. There's really not. It's, you know, we paid a lease for 20 years. We just remodeled the offices. We just stacked it with snacks. We like seeing your face. In most cases, that's all it is. I just miss what we once had. People are not judging their intention. They're judging the action. Oh, so now I got to commute for 2 hours. Now I got to do laundry. Now I got to get childcare. Now I can't go in the middle of the day and walk my dog. So that's a loaded response. I just think it goes back to, as a leader or an influencer, someone who's going to be a facilitator of quote unquote change, it'll happen much quicker if you can operate and communicate from the other person's perspective.
If you're trying to communicate from the perspective of another person, right, to really make sure you're bridging that communication gap, and the person you're talking to is hyper anchored on the loss, right? Because we've talked about using alternative words to change that are outcome centric and positively outcome centric. But a lot of people see change, hear change, feel it to be threatening, and so do anchor on what they're losing. How do we communicate about, because we have to address that loss. How do we communicate about that loss, have conversations about that loss without getting then wholly anchored on that loss and sort of myopic about what we're losing? How do we broaden the aperture to include benefits without undermining and undervaluing the loss that people are feeling and the fear they're feeling?
I love that you brought this up, because I think this is a struggle for people, is that some of what people are sharing about their personal circumstances, the loss, the impact, the person on the other end, they're not in agreement. And so there's this instinct disconnect, because they feel, so I have to validate that and I don't believe it. So even if they go, yeah, I know it's really hard, you have to come in 2 days a week, and they're going, oh my God, you used to come in 5 days a week, now it's only two. I just gave you back 6 hours. For anyone listening, the alternative to validating is just acknowledging. And it requires no judgment from you. So simply, if someone says, oh, I'm going to have to come in 2 days a week, you can acknowledge that it sounds like it's going to change your schedule. That's just an acknowledgement. You don't need to determine whether it's good or bad or defend it or explain it. And so part of communicating from their perspective is giving them some indicators that I hear you. And an acknowledgement does that. And it paves the way for what we're going to do next, which is a question. But if you're talking to me and you go, you know, I got to come in 2 days a week and I got to fight traffic, just an acknowledgement that it sounds like the change in your schedule is something you've given a lot of thought to as far as how much time you spend on the road. And I'm not patronizing anyone. I'm also not validating it either. But that paves the way. They go, okay, you get me. And so I would ask, if you feel as though it's important, what is the downside to you as far as coming in 2 days a week? They go, well, that's 4 hours to my commute. I got to go to the cleaners now because I got to bring some, whatever their responses are. I would ask them, if we're going to give weight to the full scenario, what are the benefits to this schedule now that allows you to be home 3 days a week? And if you said it saves you 4 hours for 2 days, does that mean it saves you 10 hours for the week? Your industry may be technology or medicine or research, but the business that you're in is the people business. And there will be a direct correlation between how well you understand them and where you move up as a leader. And so this ability to guide their thinking through asking questions, and we know that with the human brain, unless it's uniquely trained to do otherwise, and CIA would be an example, FBI would be an example, Navy SEALs. The human brain works this way. I ask you a question, you answer it. So I asked you what's not working for you. Then I asked you what is working for you. Your brain will bounce around to answer those questions. So the gift for you is how do you redirect their thinking? And it's through asking a question and just analyzing the full situation, because when they share with you what's wrong, whether they're right or wrong, they've only given a partial answer at that point to the total scenario.
A lot of our examples of this is how you ought to communicate, this is the outcome of this kind of communication, they're all based on flawless execution. So what do you do as you're leading change if you look up and you realize you've said the wrong thing? The words you're using haven't worked or have driven exactly the opposite impact you were hoping to drive. How do you course correct from using language that is stale or using language that is misdirecting?
It requires the emotional intelligence. And so to introduce that into the conversation, and it's probably in the top three skills that organizations are talking about today. A common definition is it's simply your ability to identify and understand an emotion in yourself and others, and then adjust your behavior accordingly. And so as a leader, you have to have this acute awareness, this real-time assessment. You have to be in the moment when you're orchestrating this change, because there's a lot at risk. It's a tremendous amount at risk. So whether it's someone's livelihood, whether it's profitability of the organization. And so if you have this emotional intelligence that you can identify and understand emotion in yourself and others, when people roll their eyes, you know, when people cross their arms, this new leader has to tap into their emotional intelligence. And simply, this happened to me as an organization last week, and there's a great deal of conflict, and they're trying to suppress it, push it under the carpet. It's just not, you know, the carpet, it's not that big, they can hide it. And so in the process, you know, of me looking to open up conversation, I could read this one person. And I said, just let me hit pause here. Tell me what's going on for you. I said, I'm across the room. I don't want to assume what you're thinking. Tell me what you're thinking as it relates to what I just said. I needed that real-time information and data so that I can make the real-time adjustment. The risk you run when you're with change and happening so rapidly is that if you don't get this real-time information and data, that's why it's imperative. It's imperative as we're navigating today that you have open, honest, on-time communication. The sooner you know, the sooner you can fix it. And so that's the net-net of the answer that you said. High emotional intelligence, look around the room, read the people. Identify their emotions, if they understand it, how they feel about it. If something's not vibing with you, their reaction, tell me, just when it hit pause, just tell me where you're at so I know whether to pivot or I know whether to persevere.
Now, I know we're coming up to the end of our time here together, and this has been a great conversation. But before we go, if people come away with just one piece of advice in crafting effective messages to drive change, what would that advice be?
The one piece of advice is, as you go in today, embrace this, that you are here to help, not judge, would be the first thing. The second thing is that where people weigh in, they buy in. And so every opportunity you get to ask a question, to garnish their thinking and garnish their perspective, even when you know the answer, still ask. This is the way that you're going to get this commitment, this discretionary performance that you are going to need versus the compliance.
Well, I appreciate your help here today, Jay, in this conversation. I know I've learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners have as well. Now, if our listeners want to connect with you directly, how should they go about doing that?
Yeah, the easiest way is it's JayWilliamsCo. So jwilliamsco.com. And you could go on there. I don't have anything to sell you. So if you're looking for something, you might be a little disappointed there. However, I am always looking for feedback and thoughts and challenges. And so you can go to the contact page and you can either set time if you want to have a conversation. If you just want to email something in, you want a response, you can do that. And my commitment at that level is to respond to everybody within 24 hours. So that is the way to reach out and to connect.
I'll be sure to include those links in the show notes. I really appreciate your time and perspective here. Hopefully our listeners can take advantage of your advice and apply it to their own teams. If any of our listeners would like to bring these kinds of conversations to their own organizations, you can visit us at blueswiftconsulting.com to schedule an intro call. Thanks again, Jay.
My pleasure. Thank you.